Welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show with Nancy Hopkins and Walt Silva, produced by Colleen Kelly of Haggy Shack Radio, simulcasted over Cosmic Reality Radio. And welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show. It's December 11th, 2018. It's produced by Cosmic Reality Radio, and this is Nancy Hopkins speaking, and with me is Walt Silver. Silver saturated in my head. I must be Tonto. why don't you, Mr. Silver, say hi to the audience.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for being here with us. I always have to say thank you for your patience with putting up with us, because sometimes we get a bit repetitive, but I hope we don't get boring, that's for sure.
No, you know, I think that, well, how many stories can we tell? We've been doing this for 1,000 hours, you know, with all the radio shows. I mean, think of it, how many we, well, you know, it's 1,000 hours of radio. And we do repeat, but one of the things that we do do is we tell the same stories basically the same way. We may come after them a little differently, but we don't change our stories. Well, except you do every once in a while. I think, maybe I remember, you know.
Well, the thing is that sometimes we go back to a story because some piece of information comes up to confirm or deny whatever it was that we were discussing, or something comes up saying, oh, you remember when we were telling, there you have it. This is evidence backing up what we were explaining. So sometimes that happens.
Well, a good example of that is last week we were talking about the MP Army Reserve unit, and I said that it was 30 days. It was a 400-day deployment. It was 400 days. And, you know, it was 100 soldiers going for 400 days. That's over a year. And that is virtually never heard of. But I, you know, when I was saying it, I said, I don't think I've got this right. And I went back and I checked it and I said, nope. So on the YouTube, I actually did put in the correct 400 on the visual that we have. But, there's more of that coming. Walt and I started talking about the fact that, the Fulford report. So do you want to just start with Fulford?
Yeah, sure. All right, I have it up on the screen.
Okay, so let's just, because it's, again, you know, it's pretty interesting information.
Okay. So the date of it is the 10th, so that's yesterday. You've talked to me about this subject in the past. All in capital letters, the SWIFT system.
Yeah, the financial system.
The banks. Yeah. So the title of this report is Secret War Centers on SWIFT After George Bush Sr. Is Executed. Since the death of Nazi Fourth Reich Führer George Bush Sr., the battle for control of the world's financial system and thus of the process of deciding humanity's future is now centering on control of the SWIFT International Interbank Electronic Transfer System. A final battle is taking place between the 13 bloodlines which have traditionally controlled the planet and the meritocratic Nazi Illuminati who control the U.S. military-industrial complex, multiple sources agree. The battle is heading for a climax of sorts now that George Bush Sr. has been, in quotes, executed, as confirmed by both Pentagon and CIA sources. Here's what a CIA source had to say. I have been told by two sources that GHW, Scherf, is the word Scherf, German for Bush. He keeps saying that, and he said it in the other report.
I think
S-C-H-E-R-F-F.
As I was thinking about it, I said, I meant to check that. I believe that there are people out there that think that the Bush family was a German family. Oh. And they've actually got pictures of Bushes with senior Nazis. It's one of those stories. So whether it's true or not, I don't know. But I don't know if it's a definitive translation to Bush, but that was their German name. That's all I know about it.
Okay. Let me do a quick check. Doesn't hurt. It only takes an instant.
I know, and you can do that. If I start doing that, I'm producing, so I've got more to think about.
I don't know. It says it's the same word. It keeps saying sheriff, unless sheriff is just a last name, not an actual word or an object.
No, it's a last name.
Well, so that's like the Queen of England, whose family name is actually a German name. Remember that?
No.
They're not. That was one of the big things. It's Gotha something with a Lox Gotha or something. Her actual last name is actually German. The British royalty are actually German people. They're not English.
The royal houses throughout Europe were descendants of Charlemagne out of France.
Mm.
The Habsburgs, for instance.
Oh,
mm-hmm. What happened, if I'm remembering my history, is that Charlemagne had three sons. And when the Charlemagne Empire was, after the death of Dad, they all sort of went their own way. So you have a German side of it, and, the British... Mm. Came, it is, there is some connection, everything goes back to Germany, I swear, but yeah, it's a convoluted history, but yeah. I didn't realize that there was a direct, that they knew the name. Well, of course they know. I mean, we just don't get taught this stuff, that's all.
Exactly. Okay, let's go back to the paragraph. Here's what a CIA source had to say. I have been told by two sources that GHW, Scherf, in quotes, Bush, was actually indicted on September 10th, 2018, for crimes against humanity, child trafficking, sedition, and treason. He allegedly pre-bargained a deal with a military tribunal hearing his case to be executed/suicided to keep his legacy intact for his family and the sheeple. Trump signed a death order. So it was a clone that was executed, since we also have intel that he died in June, another clone. I think Bush slash Sheriff actually died in January 1992, choking on sushi and then finished off by Barbara Bush with a poison cloth, as seen in the video posted last week.
Yeah, let's just stop there, because I went and I looked at that thing. And I got to tell you, that was one. Did you look at it? Did you see it?
No, I did not take the time to
watch it. You should have seen it, because it was one of the more bizarre things I have ever seen. Now, George Bush's, first off, the camera was quite a ways away from them. It wasn't like a close-up, because you were able to see, there was Bush, Barbara was to his right, and there was three other people to her, or two more people that way, and then there were some other people, and there was a cross, so you've got a pretty big group look, not something real, and I see George, he looked like he was passing out and falling forward into the dish forward. In front of him, and what happened was that she immediately stood up and had a napkin in her hand and put it up against his face, up and I thought, is he vomiting? Is he foam? Is it something that, but then she and somebody else she now is gone in front of him and is standing on his left and somebody from the right, and they virtually pushed him onto the floor. So now you don't see the table is blocking everything. You can't see a thing. Okay. And I'm telling you, within 3 seconds, A. George Bush jumped up with a big smile on his face, and and that was the end of the tape. It was strange and freaky.
So that means the clone was lying on the floor waiting.
I don't think that what I saw George do 3 seconds before that would allow him to jump up. It was bizarre.
Did you notice a detail if her hands were bare or she had gloves?
I think they were bare, but I wouldn't swear to it. But this was a big napkin. This was a dinner cloth napkin. and she just, I mean, it's not like you're, I mean, okay, so you're sitting there, and the person next to you suddenly starts falling into their food, right?
Yeah.
You turn, you take a look at this, you have to figure out what the hell is happening, right? So there's a pause between the action and the reaction in the person that would want to help him. It was like she was watching him out of the corner of her eye because he never hit the plate. I don't remember him hitting the plate. She was on top of him. Oh my God. I'm telling you, I watched it and I'm going like, there's no other.
Isn't that, I'm not a chemical expert by any stretch of the imagination, but isn't that the way ricin, the poison, works? Just a quick whiff and you're done?
Well, in my opinion, he wasn't choking on anything. I did not see any indication of choking. I just saw him. I mean, because when
he just collapsed on the floor and
well,
was intercepted midway.
It wasn't so much of a collapse. It was a passing out, falling forward. You know, a collapse is like what Hillary Clinton went through when she was trying to get into the limousine, where her entire circulatory system was, you know. No, this was like the guy went into a dead stupor before he started falling, is what I saw. And I didn't see any choking. And then he never quite hit that one, because she was on top of him immediately with this napkin in front of his face. And then, like I say, it looked to me as if he was being pushed back onto the floor. Well, you know, I mean, okay, you're in panic and stuff, and you just push the guy on the floor to lay him out to do what? But then to see this very clown-like character jump up, you know, and then they ended the tape. I mean, it's like...
So the original was a wild card. That's why they needed to rub him out.
Well, he had said some strange things, like, you know, if the American people... To a reporter, a White House reporter, if the American people knew what we did, they would chase us down the streets and lynch us.
Yeah, you can't trust somebody like that.
No.
You gotta get rid of him.
Well, you know, this guy was also apparently an artist. I may be wrong on that, but it seems like I can, you know, somebody was talking about he just wanted to go off.
He made chairs like Jimmy Carter?
I don't know, but somebody said of George Bush, he really only just wanted to go off into the back room and paint. And I assumed art paint, but maybe they meant paint the walls. I don't know. Because, you know, when I prepare for the Monday shows, I probably do a lot more, well, I do more preparation for those than these, because I listen to all these tapes to see what I'm going to put on our station. And so by Tuesday, I'm like, what? Who said what? I'm just, you know, turnstile head here. But no, there was a number of references to the fact that McCain also, I mean, again, going back to McCain, that was the strangest death too. Because, I mean, the family says, he's going off of chemo and the next day he's dead. You don't die that fast going off of chemo.
Oh, wow.
I mean, chemo is, you're not going to put any more chemicals into the body, you know, to prolong life. But because it doesn't happen overnight, you know, and then they're bringing up the other things, you know, that indicate that he had already made the agreement that he would die on such and such a day. That's why Q could be so specific when he predicted it. You know, he something about the dog, a dog's night or a dog day. There's somebody has a day, a dedicated day to dogs. And I don't remember what the quote was, but it was all really very kind of, oh wow, he had to know. And and then there was that time where both Hillary Clinton and McCain had that weird shoe thing on, like their ankles needed support. Do you remember that?
Well, I remember the thing was she was practically being levitated by the security people when she was walked to the van. It was like they were carrying one of these crash test dummies because she wasn't moving under her own power.
No, she wasn't. She was in a real state of collapse. But no, I'm talking about McCain's walking around and he's got a boot on. It's a medical boot, okay, on his right foot. And so, I forget what he did to it. But then all of a sudden, he's wearing it on his left foot. And at the same time, Hillary Clinton started wearing one. No, I'm sorry, it was on his left foot to begin with. No, it was on his right foot. Started out on his right, and then it went to his left. But Hillary Clinton had one. And there was talk at the time, are they under house arrest? And that they got the monitor on them?
Okay,
she's saying, Dolly's messaging us, when Bush took ill and was pushed to the floor, he had a suit coat on. When he jumped up seconds later, he didn't have it on. It was a white long sleeve shirt, only no suit coat. Now, that's weird, Dolly, because I remember the suit coat in both cases. I didn't see that. But that's not to say you're right or I'm right. I just didn't see that. I'll have to look at it again. Because that would pretty much, that would be like, whoa, man, it's real.
Well, if somebody's lying prone on the floor, because they say they're not dead, they're completely passed out, how quickly do you take off their coat to put it on the clone? I mean, the clone is already obviously wearing identical set of clothing. And it's just that, well, this is the typical case of continuity errors in movies. I mean, that's actually a sport in some groups. You know, how many continuity errors can you detect on such and such a movie? Have you seen that, where there's a scene? I've seen it. I've caught it so many times I don't even pay attention to it anymore. Like, there's a scene, a woman is talking to a detective, and she's standing in front of him, and she has her purse hanging off of her left shoulder. And then the camera cuts to his face, and then the camera cuts back to both of them continuing the dialogue. Now, all of a sudden, the purse is on her other shoulder, and she hasn't even moved an inch from her position, and her arms are crossed. You know, so all of those errors, you know, they cut a scene, and when they continue filming the scene, you know, that's why there are people that do continuity checks, and that would be a continuity error. You know, he goes down wearing.
Well, one of the things that I wondered about, okay, is the fact that this camera was so far away. It struck me as being more of an amateur camera, even though it was back then. You know, I'm a photographer. I look for these things. It seemed more like an amateur had taken it. If you don't think there's a camera, then they know that most human beings won't know if the jacket was on or off.
Okay, exactly. Not a detail that somebody's looking at.
Precisely. And how is it that after all these years, I'm sure that somebody, if they had it, should have brought it out long before this. You know what I'm saying? And I don't believe it was manipulated. I mean, to what end?
Yeah. Okay, back to the report. So the end of the paragraph is, military tribunals are set to begin on January 2, 2019. End of paragraph. Pentagon sources for their part said U.S. President Donald Trump was careful not to give Bush 41 a state funeral, as this executed criminal was denied a horse and caisson like Reagan got.
And that sold me on this too, because that's the first time a president has died in my memory where that did not happen, and I didn't even pick up on it. You know, they have the parade and the horse and the you know, the riderless horse thingy. None of that happened.
Oh.
So that was actually a very big event that didn't happen, I don't think. I never saw any pictures of it. Of course, I don't really pay much attention to that stuff. But if it didn't happen, which is what Bulford says, that's a really big sign. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Like Reagan got. To the victor belongs the spoils, for Trump picked former Bush Attorney General Bill Parr as his next AG. I take it that's Attorney General. And he chose the day that would live in infamy, December 7th, the Pearl Harbor anniversary, to do it, the Pentagon source added. The CIA source also wondered if Barr made a deal to avoid military tribunals and then be McCained, the term being used lately for execution / suicide. Maybe he flipped like Senator Lindsey Graham. The death of Bush, the former U.S. ambassador to China, whose brother handed over U.S. military secrets to the country, as did Hillary and Bill Clinton, means that the U.S. and China are also heading to a showdown as bloodline families seek Chinese protection, according to secret society sources. Pentagon sources say the arrest of Chinese conglomerate Huawei chief's financial officer Meng Wanzhou is aimed to take down the Clintons and their treasonous ties to China back in the 1990s. Chinese Freemasons previously admitted to this writer that they had invested heavily in getting Hillary Clinton elected as U.S. president because they had been promised a United States of China, including ASEAN, the Korean Peninsula, and Japan. I don't know what ASEAN stands for. It's all caps.
Asian Southeast something or other, I think. It's something that's my understanding. I could be wrong. But my understanding, okay, it's a loose group. It's a loose conglomeration of the different Southeast Asia in that area.
Almost like the BRICS kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. U.S. military intelligence also has confirmed to us previously that George Bush Sr. provided China with the technology needed to accurately guide their nuclear missiles. The purpose of the Clinton-Bush transfer of military technology to China was to make China more equal militarily with the G7 so that their planned Gog versus Magog end-time war would be sufficiently destructive to result in their planned artificial end times.
Now, let me interrupt you again, because do you remember when George Bush actually made that reference to the French prime minister?
No.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something to the effect of, are you in with us? Meaning, I think it was when they were going to do the invasion of Iraq, and they were trying to bring the coalition together. Again, people, fact check me. But what happened was that George Bush was trying to convince the French to go in on it, and he made this weird reference to this Gog Magog. You know, aren't you going to help us bring this in? I didn't know what the reference meant. And a lot of people didn't. So, but it stood out, and so people looked into it, and they're going like, wow, what does this mean? Because that's a war event that ends all wars, because it ends the planet.
So this was the, this is the original, the one that choked to death, who said this?
Say that again?
Well, I'm still thinking that the first one got eliminated because he was a wild card. So, because he said that thing about Americans lynching them. So maybe I'm thinking, was it the original who let this slip of the tongue?
No, this was Junior.
Junior. Okay.
That's what was so, because
so Junior is just as reliable as the original.
Well, when I heard it and I'm going like, oh, this just sounds like a George Jr. weirdness thing, you know? And then when I found out what the explanation for it was, I was thinking, oh, I don't think he should have said that. You know, like, because I think he can't remember what he's supposed to say and not say. George Jr. Now, George the dad, no, he was making a point. And yes, he could have, by 92, he could have been considered a danger to them. Yes, I would think. If what he was saying was real. You know, I mean, the guy was one of those dichotomies because, you know, there's something that happens in wartime and the camaraderie between soldiers, military people. And I always found it difficult to see him in the really true bad guy role. I could understand him in a CIA role because the CIA is still fighting that war. You know, they just never stopped fighting. And so, you know, it would still be a patriotic kind of role. But then when you get into the, whether he was involved or not, he certainly must have been aware of the CIA and the drug trafficking and the, you know, child trafficking and all the other things that have been associated with the higher echelons of government, including the CIA people. I mean, all of that. I always felt maybe that, yes, these things that he's saying is sort of like Eisenhower, the last speech he gives, you know, warns us, well, why didn't you do something about it?
Yeah.
Before he had to, you know, leave and, oh, by the way, watch out, there's a fox in the hen house. You know? Okay, go on.
Okay, so that, the end of that paragraph was the, China more equal militarily with the G7 so that their plan Gog versus Magog end times war would be sufficiently destructive to result in their planned artificial end times. Instead, the religious fanatics behind this plan are going to face military tribunals starting in January 2019, Pentagon and CIA sources confirm. To prepare for these tribunals, Pentagon sources say Army Chief General Mark Milley was named as the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to provide continuity and protect Trump into his second term. This announcement was made unusually early to send a message to the deep state, as the previous GCS chairman was Army, and Army was chosen again over Air Force and Navy, the source continued. Air Force and Navy brass have been heavily implicated in the planned World War III, which is why they are missing their turn to run the entire JCS, Defense Intelligence Agency sources note. To understand what sort of world changes the U.S. military government is hoping for, let us take a look at what U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said in a speech delivered at the German Marshall Fund on December 4th, 2018. In this speech, Pompeo said we need to ask if the current international order serves the good of its people as well as it could. And if not, we must ask how we can right it. Later in a speech, he made it clear that current international institutions like the World Bank, the IMF, the European Union, the United Nations, the African Union, and the Organization of American States were all failing and needed root and branch reform. Here are some excerpts from his speech. And it reads, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund were chartered to help rebuild war-torn territories and promote private investment and growth. Today, these institutions often counsel countries who have mismanaged their economic affairs to impose austerity measures that inhibit growth, and crowd out private sector actors. Today, at the United Nations, peacekeeping missions drag on for decades, no closer to peace. The UN was founded as an organization that welcomed peace-loving nations. I ask, today, does it continue to serve its mission faithfully? Is the European Union ensuring that the interests of countries and their citizens are placed before those of bureaucrats here in Brussels? However, Pompeo's proposed solutions to imitate what Trump was doing in the U.S. and to reassert the power of nation states and U.S. leadership fell far short of the mark when it came to offering solutions to problems faced by the Western world and the planet as a whole. He did not, for example, mention that the current financial system, controlled by a few interbred families, has devastated the middle class and the G7 and created huge gaps between the rich and the rest, even in places like China. The situation is such that 0.1% of the population controls more wealth than the bottom 90% of the population. And yet Pompeo did not propose a reset or jubilee to correct the situation. Nor did Pompeo mention the fact that humanity has wiped out 70%, 60% of animal life since the 1970s, or offer any sort of solution. In fact, Trump tweeted on December 8th that the Paris Agreement isn't working out so well for Paris. Protests and riots all over France. People do not want to pay large sums of money, much to third world countries that are questionably run in order to maybe protect the environment. For sure, the Paris Agreement was based on fraudulent science that carbon causes global warming. We won't go into detail here, but look at this link for an egregious example. However, at least they were trying. The White Dragon Society proposes an alternative, which is to set up a meritocratically staffed future planning agency to preside over a multi-trillion dollar campaign to stop environmental destruction and end poverty. This could also provide jobs to the useless eaters slated for mass murder by the Nazi faction that Trump has taken over. We would like to see the U.S. military government propose something similar and get China, India, and the rest of the world on board too. In any case, the global warming faction looks like it's losing its battle for the West, especially in France, headquarters of the global warming Rothschild faction. Here, Pentagon sources say former French chief of defense staff, who was fired by French President Emmanuel Macron, Army General Pierre de Villiers, is the people's choice for Elysee Palace. They add that Marine Le Pen is mightier than the sword, and if she fails to be president, would be a good prime minister or foreign minister. The U.S. military government's fight against the bloodlines, though, is far from over. Getting back to Pompeo's speech, at the top of this article, we note he said, America intends to lead now and always. For example, here in Belgium in 1973, banks from 15 countries formed SWIFT to develop common standards for cross-border payments, and now it's an integral part of our global financial structure. SWIFT recently disconnected sanctioned Iranian banks from its platform because of the unacceptable risk they posed to the system as a whole. What he was alluding to here is a European, in parentheses, bloodline and Chinese effort to get around SWIFT sanctions by setting up an alternative international payment system. This is still happening, with countries like India, Russia, and China dumping SWIFT in order to end U.S. control of the international financial structure. The U.S. has been fighting back by forcing regime change in European countries that try to get out of SWIFT. Here, in part, the troubles in France. Hence, in part, the troubles in France. The other big battleground is Japan. Here, on December 6, SoftBank Corp. experienced a four-hour shutdown of its mobile and line-based telecommunication network. SoftBank has been working with Huawei. The name, by the way, means for China, has been working with Huawei to sell its phones and use its payment system. There is also the suspicion that SoftBank is using the IPO of its telecoms unit set for December 19th as a disguised way of selling the unit to China, more specifically Huawei, CIA sources say. Please bear in mind that SoftBank bought Fortress Asset Management, which owns Musashi KK, the company whose machines count more than 80% of Japan's votes. Richard Kojimitsu of the Independent Party of Japan has provided detailed evidence showing the company, founded by Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's grandfather, former Prime Minister Nobusuke Kishi, is used to steal Japan's elections. It is also worth noting that the Abe government last week passed a law allowing Japan's water resources to be privatized and presumably sold at a discount to Veolia, a company controlled by the French branch of the Rothschild family. Also bear in mind that SoftBank CEO Masayoshi Son has been offered at least $45 billion by Israeli Rothschild's stooge Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Anyone want to bet on some? And that's the end of the report.
Some of it gets tedious because there's so many things that, you know, but what is intriguing is that even though it's tedious, it's like you said just a little earlier ago, it ties things in. You know, it's like, oh, because of that, okay, I see this, you know, took. And a lot of times when we talk science, we know that we're probably boring our audience, but the fact of the matter is that when they walk away from it, they say, yeah, but there is a science, you know? So when you walk away from listening to Ben, you go, well, there is something happening, you know? And it's very intriguing how, where does he get these sources? You know, these CIA sources. Who are these people?
Well, remember his father was, I forget the country, but he's Canadian born, and his father was ambassador, I don't know in what country. So right then and there, his family history has, it seems that they're heavily involved in politics. So I guess you develop contacts after so many years.
Yeah, that's probably true. And he was, you know, he's a bright guy. He was Forbes? Yeah, I think. On the Japanese desk of Forbes, which is why he's got so much of the Japanese talk going on. So January, they're going to... Well, it seems like they've already started the... if they actually had a court martial on McCain and on George Bush, then the military courts are already up and running. It's just they're not
being televised.
They're not being televised. Oh, but you know what did happen? Apparently back in November, but again, one of these things that isn't televised and isn't talked about, and you know, I mean, I'm somebody that really pays attention to anything about 9/11, and this is the first I've heard of it. There was the 9/11 architects, those guys that say these buildings couldn't have come down the way that the government said they did by the pancaking. And they've been at it since, you know, right after it. It's just gotten bigger. I think I may be a member. I'm not a member, but I think I'm, you know, I'm not a member with credentials. I think I was, you know, because they used to send me all this stuff. But anyway, so they've been long at this, working on it. And now there is another group, and I forget what the name of that group is, but what they're doing is that they put together a legal document that they presented to the Attorney General's office in New York City because it pertained to the Trade Center that was in the jurisdiction of that particular AG office. Mm-hmm. And it's got 57 points of science, proven science, that say what you're saying couldn't have happened. This is what happened. And highly documented, we've talked about, I know there's at least 57, you know, points of data that say that no, this couldn't be there. The big one being the thermite. Thermite is molecular particles that you get when you have a thermite. It's really a cutting. It's not so much of an explosion. It is, but it's more of a, it burns so hot that the trusses actually melt. In cutting, when you're taking down a building, you're making cuts in the pillars so that the thing falls.
So that's why it's ideal for demolitions.
Correct. That's right. And when thermite is working, very often you'll get a stream of molten metal that you see in the pictures, in the video on the towers. But it was the dust. The dust had thermite in the dust. And so that was, that's the big thing that would make any sane scientist say, oh, wait a minute, that's a game changer. And that came out, oh, I bet 6-7 years ago. So anyway, they present this to the Attorney General of New York, and the Attorney General of New York. Now, I've been saying, a lot of people have been saying, well, Bush said that he was, Trump said that he was going to open the 9/11 story again. Well, it's his AG, you know, and they have, they're going to have a separate grand jury convened to look at the data that's been presented by this particular group. And that is absolutely mind-bending. The guy from the architects, he said, it was funny because I had said to Dolly in a, I said, this is one of those things like that Dave told us in 2018, we'd see things we never would have thought we would see, you know. And this is one of them for me, that the AG is, is actually going to reopen the case. That's just, you know, no congressional committee. This is a criminal investigation. Which is, enormous. I can't tell you how enormous this is because in a court of law, yes, I could win a case in a court of law. And these people have got the credentials to do it. These are the people that you would want to tell you what happened, because they're the people that build these things and take them down. And so you, to have this agreed to is just enormous. So it's a special grand jury. What that means special, it means it's only being put together for this one case. In normal law, you'll have grand juries sitting to hear whatever case comes before them. But this is a special, so that it means it will. That's what they're only going to be looking at the 9/11 and the 57 in points that they're disputing and saying that, you know, this is a criminal act, not a criminal act of the people that gave us the first story. You know, this is big. So, you know, I now think that, yes, in fact, even though I didn't realize that this had happened, that Donald Trump is keeping his word. Comment? Are you muted? Yeah.
No, I'm listening to what you're saying. But no, the thing that got me was the little tidbit that this man who's coming in as the AG, because he's protecting the drunk. His plan is to continue protecting Trump during his second term. So it's already in the works.
Yeah, I caught that too. I did catch that. Yeah, second term. So yeah, that was a big thing that happened. That I found out about this. So what else is happening out there? Well, France, do you have any idea of what is actually happening in France? Because apparently they're revolting in the streets, but the police are not stopping them. What do you know about that?
Well, all I know is that I've seen the pictures that have been posted, and it turns out that the police are actually joining the protesters. There's a photo of riot police in Thailand, and it seems that there are major protests there. And you see when riot police go out onto the street, they're carrying these tall shields where they only look through the top part of it because the top part of the shield is transparent. And all the shields were in line or in an orderly line on the ground. They put down all their shields. They were not attacking the protesters. They were actually joining them. And the same thing happened in France. I've seen photos where the police are wearing those yellow vests, which is meant to be used in cases of emergencies. And they're not attacking the mobs. They're actually joining them. So, it's kind of interesting how sometimes history repeats itself. Doesn't that look like the precursor of the... obviously, it wasn't televised back then, and it wasn't on the internet, but it looks very much like history books when they describe the French Revolution, doesn't it? And the guillotine was put to use, and lots of people lost their heads. Remember that one? You're the history major in the group.
Well, yes, but the thing of it is that the French Revolution coincided with a certain situation that happened to the rye crop. Some kind of a mold gets on the rye and produces a hallucinogenic. And there's a supposition that the French Revolution was created because everybody was like on an LSD trip. And the same thing happened in the Salem witch trials. This woman wrote a book about it because she thought that, well, I guess I don't know why she started it, but she made a connection between these kind of like witch hunts, if you will, that are based on the fact that the rye was in a molded state. And somehow or another they had, you know, a sample of rye that, I don't know how it started, but what she did was she knew what the weather conditions were that would create this particular mold. And so she went back in time to look at the weather, you know, as best they can, and sure enough, she found a correlation between the weather that creates this mold on rye in rye-eating populations that also had these very strange, you know, there were witches and I mean, the French Revolution was nasty.
Oh, yeah.
It was terribly brutal. So, you know, I like to think that human beings aren't really like that unless they're somehow poisoned or hallucinogenics or mind controlled. So I kind of like the story about the rye and the mold. You know, but no, it's, I don't know that there is any kind of event that we can say is similar to it in the past. Well, probably the protests of war during the Vietnam War. Did you have any of that in Argentina?
I was just a little kid. I would hear the grown-ups talking about the Vietnam, and there would be stuff on the news, and it seemed to drag on forever, like the O.J. Simpson trial. I mean, that's what I perceived as a kid.
Well, yeah, because it dominated the news. They would have been watching the news because there wasn't that much other stuff to watch at that time. The protests, it was weird because I did this sort of paper comparing when they did the walkout, the anti Wall Street thing. I forget what they called it now, even. And all these people the Occupy movement was called. And I compared the difference between the Occupied movement and the Vietnam War movement. And in doing so, I had to go back and Google the Vietnam War and what some of the protesting was. And I was really shocked that the protests were worldwide. As a protester in the United States, we weren't getting the information that this was happening on a worldwide basis. And there were many, many of these events that had over 1 million people in them. So if I had to point to some historical time period where, you know, something similar is happening, I'd say, you know, the late 60s into the first couple of years of 70. Because the amount of the police, because I was in some of these rally things, you know, and the police weren't exactly sympathetic to the students, because I was at the university at the time, because the other stuff that was happening, you had the Black Panthers and you had all this other stuff happening around it, you know, but their position that the war probably wasn't right. Because there was very few Americans that really thought the war was right. Because it wasn't a war. The Congress had never declared it a war.
I mean, as a little kid, I always wondered, from what we were taught in history in primary school. And the other kids would just laugh at me. And I said, you know, one country attacks another country, they go to a war. You know, when and where did the Vietnamese attack the U.S.? And then as later on, as I would grow up, somebody says, oh, they were just there to defend the French interest because the Vietnamese wanted to get out. They wanted to stop being French slaves, and the Americans were just there protecting French interests. But I don't know if that's true. I mean, you were in the military.
It was the rubber factories, the rubber plantations.
Oh.
Well, that and the fact that they like to have these little wars. See, the problem with Vietnam, really, is that it taught them how to operate wars that we don't win and suck up a tremendous amount of the money into the military-industrial complex. Because they didn't go to Congress, and that's why it's always called the Vietnam conflict. You know, now you hear it as the Vietnam War. Legally, I don't believe it's a war. I don't believe that Congress ever went and said, yes, we're going to declare war on North Vietnam. It was advisors were brought in initially, and then the advisors advised that they bring in troops. And Kennedy in the summer of 63, he was saying, you know, no, this is crazy. We got to get out of here. This is just a quagmire. What are we doing there? And he wanted to eradicate the presence of American forces, even as advisors in Vietnam. And, of course, that's one of the things. He had a lot of reasons that they killed him. And that was one of the main ones, that he wanted to, you know, snuff out their little money-making war or conflict. Mm. And but what it did, it taught them that it worked. One estimate that I heard at the time that's just stuck in my mind, even though I'm not good at these number things, was that it cost $50,000 for every Vietnamese soldier, in quotes, killed. And it was actually Dick Gregory that said it. And he was a comedian. And he said, think about it. If we are supposed to be, you know, bringing democracy to people, why do we have to use guns and weapons to make them agree to be democratic? He said, it's like taking that 50,000, putting it all in a great big huge box, and putting it on your front porch. They'd come and they'd get it. You know, it's like if you offered them a way out that it wasn't, you know, if you had a democracy that was really good, that people wanted to be that, you wouldn't have to put a gun to their heads. You know, it's just kind of like that, you know. So,
well, then did nobody recognize the old mafia tactics? You pay us protection money, or we burn down your restaurant, because that's essentially what it is. It's mafia tactics.
Well, that's why the standing army is there to begin with. You know, it was interesting that report from Iron Mountain, the one where all these very, you know, academic credentialed people, actually John Kennedy set up the question. He said, what would happen to society and economy and all the rest of it if there were no more wars? And even though he was in the summer of 63, he signed his own death warrants one after the other. And he set this group up, and then after he was killed, the group just kept going. And it was, they put out a report that is the report from Iron Mountain. And in it, they look at all of the different aspects of what would happen if you didn't have war. And it is phenomenal, because one of the reasons that you have war is so that you can substantiate the need for a standing army. But the reason you need the standing army is to keep the government in power. You know?
Yeah, it's called civilian royalty. Because yeah. It's essentially the way the kings operated. But isn't that the way, again, I always go back, I always rely on you being a history major. Wasn't that traditional royal politics?
How are you saying that?
Well, for example, you have, this is from my memory of history through the different schools, you know, history that I learned in Argentina, history that I saw here, is that in the old medieval times, you're a king and you're standing next to a neighboring country, and that neighboring country has amazing water resources, or they have gold resources or whatever. So we're not going to get together and discuss with those peoples how to share what they have. We're just going to invade them, take them over, and that way we own what they have. It was simple, but that was the simple, you know, caveman politics. We want what they have. We have a bigger army. That's it. We invade.
Actually, it's not caveman, because the caveman realized the power of the group. You didn't want to be a single caveman out there or a small group.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I'm saying? This came on later, after you had tribes, and you've got too many people for whatever resource you need. Now, in America, when this would happen in an American Native American tribe, part of the tribe would break off and just go deeper into the wilderness. But as the populations became more intense, you didn't have that option. So it is an easy thing to make people warlike nations. But the fact of the matter is the politicians want you to war, because then that makes their job security pretty good. You know, the soldiers go out there and they fight. They have to be fed and armed. And so the industrialists, you know. So if you...
Well, this guy, Robert Steele, I mentioned him in one of the previous shows. He didn't even use philosophy or politics to explain. He just used accounting.
Yes.
He says, in a time of peace, 90% of the population benefit and they achieve prosperity in a time of peace. But in a time of war, the 1% benefit and have prosperity. That's why there's war, because the 1% want to get richer and richer and richer. And that's all of the just simple rules of accounting. But it's also pure insanity. You know, what kind of, it's like you having, you know, when you, every time you get hungry, you eat one hand or you eat part of your arm. You know, what kind of existence is this if humanity is a human collective, is a living being? It has to destroy itself to survive? No, that's absolutely, it's pure insanity.
Okay, so. Well, I know you don't watch television. But I do, periodically. And last night I confronted the absolute enormity of how insane things have gotten. I might have mentioned to you once before that there was a television show that was coming on called Dr. Pimple.
I don't know.
Okay, this is serious, Walter. This is serious. There's a television show out there called Dr. Pimple, and the entire show is about how this doctor gets rid of pimples, and she pops pimples. That's what she does on this friggin' show. So they were advertising it when it came out. I've never seen it. But I'm sitting there doing, I think it was football was on. And I'm only half listening, you know, but all of a sudden it's the Dr. Pimple thing again. And they are having a show and it's called The 12 Pimples of Christmas. It is the most disgusting ad I have ever seen, but it also made me aware of how insane they have a show, a TV show about this? What?
Well, I think I can beat yours if you don't mind.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Get this one around your noggin. Keeping Up with the Kardashians has been on for 15 years.
Is that
a show
right?
About, exactly, man. They have just started season 15.
Oh, that's
a
insane.
Show about absolutely nothing at all. About the dramas and nonsensical bullshit of a group of people with money. I mean, if that's, I would rather watch somebody popping pimples. At least they're doing something useful for somebody. They're getting rid of somebody's pimple. Not a bad thing.
Oh, my God. Okay, with that, I'm going to put Jessica Eliseri's water on. We'll be back in about 3-4 minutes.
All I want is the water. All I want is the sea, to feel that sunshine, that warm ocean breeze. I know life is good with a routine, but sometimes I need somewhere to be free. I will search until I find somewhere to calm my mind and feel all the goodbye inside. Wash with the water, wash in the sea. Live by the water, live to be free. Heal with the water, just feel the peace. Let your mind wander and let it all be. This earth is a privilege that some may not know. Don't take it for granted, 'cause we reap what we sow. We are so blessed to have what we have. Share good intentions and it'll all come back. I will search until I find somewhere to calm my mind and feel all the good vibes inside. Wash with the water, wash in the sea. Live by the water, live to be free. Heal with the water, just feel the peace. Let your mind wander and let it all be. All I want is the water. All I want is the sea, to feel that sunshine, somewhere to be free. Wash with the water, wash in the sea. Live by the water, live to be free. Heal with the water, just find the peace. Let your mind wander and let it all be. Let your mind wander.
And welcome back to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, December 11th, 2018. My name's Nancy Hopkins. It's Cosmic Reality Radio Production. With me is Walt Silva. And before we go into the second hour here, I really want to ask you to think. Just Mona didn't show up on her show today, Walt. They did. The Studio B was playing Studio A, and I like tried to get a hold of her, but she wasn't coming up. And then I remembered they have a. They were talking about some kind of a southeastern storm that was going to be damaging. But I thought it was a couple of days ago. But I think she might be out of power because they have like 300,000 or something without power.
Who's out of power?
Mona Radler.
Oh.
So, we wish, you know, hope and send good energy and see that power on throughout that North Carolina. I guess it went up South Virginia down into the Northern Georgia even, I think. So, gosh, I mean, we have outages here with the storms that we get, but in the summer. I can't imagine losing your power during the winter like that. That's got to be, you know, awful. So,
yeah, that's why there are places here they get a bad rep because there are neighborhoods where people don't like them. There are people that have wood furnaces, or they have a hybrid wood and gas furnace because of that situation. That in case there's an outage, I mean, you don't freeze. You can still, you know, heat your home until the power comes back. But one of the people where I worked, she lived in one of these neighborhoods where the houses are really, they're not bunched up together. There is actually a distance, kind of not country, but, you know, almost semi-country. And she kept having this particular neighbor that kept complaining with her in City Hall that, oh, she's getting all the smell and all the fumes from her wood furnace. And she says, and we're like so far away from this woman. And this lady used to say, I can't control which way the wind is going to blow. But City Hall wouldn't do anything never knocked on her door to stop her because she wasn't violating any municipal code. The area was coded for people could own and run wood furnaces. So, you know, go figure. My next door neighbor is like that. She can't stand to smell of the tiniest whiff of smoke. If somebody's burning wood or somebody's making a barbecue, she has to go out and find out who the hell's making a barbecue and who has, you know, who's burning wood, who's burning leaves. She can't stand to smell any of that. So,
oh my gosh. No, but yeah, Mona, I truly feel for you and your neighbors out there. Anyway, be safe, be blessed. Hope you're staying warm somehow. I have to tell you about the cat story. I told you I'd tell you the cat
story. Oh, yeah.
All right, so I don't know how old a cat's supposed to be before you get them fixed. And I was trying, I mean, I've never had a problem with a cat. I mean, I've never had this kind of a problem. I had a couple of feral cats that really wouldn't let you touch them. But these guys were kittens, and they were, you know, in a home environment, even though they only had that one big room. So I make this catio for them so they can at least go outside because I've got the mom fixed and I've got the little boy fixed, but I don't have these two girls. So I kind of put it off trying to get them so I know I can handle them because the one of them, when I first captured her to bring her in the house and she was like half the size she is now, she was just a tiger. I mean, like, oh my gosh, I had to get a towel, get over her. Well, I finally decided, no, I'm going to get this done. I'm going to get this done. If they go into a reset and these cats go into heat, oh, my God, I'm going to be miserable. Let's get it done. Let's get it done while the vet's office can still operate, you know. So I plan it all out, and you know, I get it all together to do it. And I didn't feed them that last feeding at night, so they were really hungry. I'd been feeding them in this cage is like 4 feet long and 3 feet wide, you know, and then it's, you know, a good 3 feet tall. So it's a big cage, and I put the food in there, and little Jasmine runs right in there, and she's doing exactly what she's supposed to be doing. But that Willy Wild one that I've got, she goes in, and then something spooked her. Now, there's no, I'm not, she probably is reading my mind or something, and she backs out. Well, now her brother's trying to get in because he's hungry, too. So I kind of, like, push him aside and close the door on her, catching her foot just a little. It wasn't any pressure, but she, by now, she's going, oh, to hell with it. I'm too hungry to worry about what might be wrong. And she runs to the food. So I lock them in. I've got them taken care of. Yay, you know. So now I get the carriers. I get two different separate carriers. I lay them up, and I put something behind it in case when I am turning from taking them out of the kennel thing into the carrier, that it's right there and already, right? So Jasmine's no problem. I've got gloves on. I've got a jacket thing on so I don't get hurt because I know this little one. But Jasmine's a piece of cake. Get her in there, no problem. So then I go back for Bingo. And Jean's the one that told me her name was Bingo. And I, you know, it's more like bing, 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 because she was all over that cage. She was hanging from the top. I couldn't grab her, nor could I get a towel on her, because she was flying. I mean, it was like, and screaming. She starts screaming. Oh, well, I finally just said, hell with it, and I reach in and I grab her. And she starts screaming, and she's trying to bite me, and she's got, it's all 4 feet come out and start to try to claw you, you know? And I'm trying to protect myself, keep my hands around her, because she's also twisting and turning, and to get her into that carrier. And so I finally get her out of the kennel, and I turn to the carrier, and the door is shut. and all the commotion, the door not locked but shut. So I'm like, now I'm like, got my, she's in between my legs and I'm holding her, right? And I have to open up this kennel door to get her in there when Mom shows up from the screaming. And honestly, God, I look up and she's looking at me like I think she's going to be on me in a second, you know? But she looks at the situation and she trusts me enough that she goes, is this I should attack or help? And in that little framework, and I don't hardly ever hear them, but under the stress, they were screaming in my head, you know? And I go, okay, if I don't get this cat in here right now, I'm going to have Mama on top of me. And so I just kind of manhandled her and stuffed her in there and shut the door. You know, and by that time I was exhausted. And so anyway, mom calmed down because she stopped screaming. And so I take him over to the vets, and I'm taking him over the night before they're going to have the procedure, because this, you can see what I just went through. I don't want to go through that at 6 o'clock in the morning to get them there for 7. So, and plus I wanted it to be nice and, you know, get over there, get adjusted, don't be freaky, you know, and so anyway, they go over there. But when I get there, I tell them, I said, be careful of this one, right? So yeah, you know, looking at me like I'm not, you know, I'm not really a cat person, because some of them don't know me, you know, and, but then Laura says, oh, okay, I'll keep an eye on it. Well, when Laura called me and told me about, you know, they're ready to be picked up, she said, and that cat that you told me was, she said, the guy that went in there came back, you know, oh my God, what is this thing? They had trouble. And then while I went to pick him up, and the vet came out, and I mean, I knew this guy when he just graduated college. We're very good friends. And he says to me, oh my God, he said, that one cat is just unbelievable. And I said, wow. I said, did anybody get hurt? And he said, no, nobody got hurt. He said, but I waited for Jason to get here. I wasn't going to try to touch her. I said, you've learned. And he said, I have learned. So, yeah. And, you know, she's the one that is the more timid. She sits around and cries sometimes just because something is annoying her. You know, you never know why she's crying. When it gets too cold, she shivers. You know, and then I think she might be a schizophrenic cat. I wonder if there is such a thing.
Or the humans projecting on the poor cat. Huh?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It was quite an experience, but it's done. So
they're all fixed, the mother and the kids?
Everybody's fixed, yes, except for the dad. He's outside.
The dad is a wild cat.
Yeah, yeah. But it was funny because when I brought him back in, he was right there on the porch. I'm not exactly sure why, but he was right there on the porch. I said, "Do you want to see your girls?" And he did. I know that they had eye contact because one of them, probably the Tasmanian devil, all of a sudden there's this hissing and stuff, and I'm thinking, oh, well, I guess I didn't have to worry about her getting nailed by him.
Well, one of the things is that that happened to us when they've been in the hospital for whatever reason, and it happened with Gordy because he was plugged up with crystals, so they had to put him on an IV because he's like a camel, never drinks water, so we have to add water to his food so that he will consume water. Otherwise, he won't go to the water dish. The others have no problem. They drink water just fine, but he's like that, and when they do that, they get too many crystals in their urine, and they get plugged up. So he almost died from that, and we took him to the hospital, and he was in the hospital for something like 4 or 5 days. So when he came back, nobody recognized him. They treated him like he was an alien wild cat or something. And here's this poor cat coming back, you know, recovering from medical attention. So I bought a diffuser. They make like there are like two different name brands out there. One is Feli Away, and then there's another name brand. And I was lucky; I was able to find it at Target. And what you do, it has a plug, and you plug it into the outlet, into the electricity, and it has a little bottle with a wick, and then the tip of the wick gets warmed, so it begins to diffuse the liquid. And what it is, it's supposed to be a smell like the pheromones cat give off. You know, when they rub their faces and their chins on things, and they look like they're caressing whatever it is that they're rubbing against. What they're doing is they're putting their pheromones on it. So they recognize, okay, this is my territory, this is my place, and everything is okay. So this product is sold for that. When they start spraying because they're in fear, and they're suspicious, or they're uncomfortable in the place, or they dislike the place. So by putting the diffuser on, it fills the environment with that smell. You can't, as a human, you can't smell it, but they can. So thankfully to that diffuser, they started calming down around Gordy, and they accepted him just fine. And the problem went away. But if I hadn't bought that, they would still be hissing and yelling at him because his whole smell changed by being in the hospital surrounded by other animals.
Well, I think I had two things that went well because of that. First off, it was only an overnight type of thing. The second thing was that, because I was I was afraid of that. I'd seen that too many times. So I was afraid of that. And when I opened up the carriers and they came out, well, first off, they didn't come out of the carriers even though they were opened. They just stayed in there for a bit. And then Drew, the boy, he ran over. And he looked inside, and it was like, oh. And he turns around, and he just ran out into the catio. But then Jasmine came out, and she followed him. She went out. And then Bingo did the same thing. She went out. And then, I mean, one after the other. And then Mom kind of looked at me, and she went, well, I'm going out there, too. And so she goes out there. Now I'm watching them through the window to see if there's any animosity, and there wasn't. You know, both Drew, they were rubbing, they were all rubbing up against each other. So,
that's because it was a quick procedure. I mean, they weren't gone days on end. So that's the big difference there.
Well, and also because Mom and Drew had already gone through it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like, I don't know how much they remember or don't remember, or, you know, I know some cats don't forget anything, but you know, as far as that is, but I think that they already, it would have been some, that smell would have been something they already had been familiar with. So I think that might have aided too, but there was absolutely no, but I just went in there and Drew and Mom are back in the room, but those two are still outside. So I hope they're all right.
You have a message from Dolly in Skype chat.
One of my house spirits. Oh, yeah. She should tell the story, but she was...
Are you available to come on the show? Or she's hearing us in delayed?
It's 20-second delay. Yeah, because I don't... I know what happened, but I'm not exactly sure why she was in the garage or something. Somehow or another, she went into the... I guess it was the garage, and all of a sudden somebody screamed, like scared, and she thought it was Annette. And so she says to Annette, calls into Annette, and Annette goes, no, and, you know, didn't know what it was, and she believes it must have been a house spirit, that she actually spooked a house spirit.
Wow. You would think the living have better things to do than going around scaring spirits, right? She really? Says, oh, let me get the headset. So she's going to get her headset.
Okay.
She's going to get her headset right.
Yeah. I had a very interesting time on the Shungite show this morning with Kevin Smith, the guy that goes to the Renaissance fairs.
Mm-hmm.
And he has taken and made a black scrying mirror. I'm assuming you know what they are?
I know what a mirror is. My grandfather used to use a plate of water for scrying as opposed to using a mirror.
Okay.
I think I've seen a picture on Facebook of his fancy mirror.
Yeah, he did a video thingy. But what he does, anybody can do this, you take a picture frame, like a regular picture frame, and mm-hmm. you take the glass out of it and you paint the glass until there's absolutely no light coming through the paint, black paint. Well, he did it with Shungite, okay? Mm-hmm. And he actually did it to a piece of glass that was slightly bowed, you know, that it came out like it had a contour to it.
Yeah, and, the convex glass.
Right.
Like,
right,
you know, the right. old mirrors, all, yeah.
Right. And so then he put S4 S4 powder in it, and he was telling what it was all about. And Dolly heard the show, so let me just see if she's got her earphones on. I was waiting for her to message me, and then I realized, oh, wait a minute, she's not on this call. All right, I'm getting
can you bring her in?
I can bring her in. I'm bringing her in. Okay. I'm adding her. All right, so she should answer. We're calling you now. Of course, she won't hear me for 20 seconds. I don't hear it ringing on our end. You hear it ringing?
No, did you bring her?
There she is. Okay. Hi, Dolly.
Wow, that was a different screen. I didn't even know how to answer it.
I've had trouble. I didn't even realize a couple of times where the thing, who's calling, what happened? You know, yeah, they made another change. I know.
They did. Oh, jeez. Yeah. Well, howdy, y'all.
Hello, Dolly Angel. So tell us your big adventure in Spirit Line.
Well, Nancy told it good. I was going out. I was doing laundry, and my washer and dryer's in the garage. So I went to the garage door, which is off. It comes off of my, hold on, I got to turn off the radio on in the chat room. There we go. Okay. So I went to the door. It's in the dining room. And off of the dining room is a little hallway that goes to Annette's bedroom, the guest room, and the spare bathroom, Annette's bathroom. So I was in the dark, which I shouldn't do, but I was. And I opened the garage door, and all of a sudden, I hear this. I said, oh my gosh, Annette, I didn't mean to scare you. I thought you heard me coming. And Annette's, when she's in her bedroom, she's got the door closed so the cats won't get in there. And she's saying, Mom, are you talking to me? So I went to her room and I opened the door. I said, did I just scare you? She said, no, I didn't even hear you. What were you doing? I said, did you hear the scream? Because it came from that area. She said, I didn't hear any scream. I said, seriously, you didn't hear that big scream? She said, no, I didn't hear anything, Mom. I said, well, I just scared the bejeebers out of one of our spirits.
So did you go out calling to see who it was?
I did. I went out and apologized. I said, I'm really sorry. I had no idea that I could scare a spirit. I did not intend to scare you. I didn't know you were there. And who is it anyway? Which one of you are, is it? Well, they wouldn't answer me. I guess they were all pissed off at me then. And here's Annette scaring me.
Well, you should have said, you know, I am the landlady here, so don't get all snippy with me now.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Well, I was just shocked that I had scared a spirit.
Yeah, you would think they would have had bigger sense, right? Well, now you know.
Yeah.
Death doesn't make a genius out of anybody.
No.
It's just death means you're just a person that doesn't have a solid body. That's about it. If you were a dork before death, then you're still a dork after death.
Oh, that's true. Whatever you are here, you are over there.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't any different when I went over during my NDEs. And people I talk to really aren't. If I get them right away, which is not a usual thing to do, they're the same. They haven't had time to change yet. But I don't usually get the people right after they've gone over.
Hey, Dolly, you saw the show or heard the show this morning or noontime with Kevin Smith and the mirror. Uh-huh. What'd you think?
Oh, I liked it. I have to listen to it again because I couldn't comprehend everything he was saying. It was so incredible. And I'm fighting this cold, so my head was giving me fits at that point. So I want to listen to it again and hear what he said. I'm glad you asked the questions that I had put in there for you.
Well, go ahead, Walt.
No, I was just going to mention, I don't want to stray too far away from the subject of Kevin Smith. I just wanted to say that I sent the FOFA report to Dolly when it came out on Monday, and Dolly wrote back commenting about it. And then I said, what do the folks on the other side say about it? And Dolly responded something along the lines of, she said, they say things are moving along nicely. Something like that.
Yeah, something like, I think they were saying that everything's going okay the way it should. That's the impression I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this from Dave or from the others?
No, it wasn't from Dave. It was from others. And it was from several others.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I got this new group that's with me. I don't know what it is with me and spirits. But
the scaredy group?
This was one of the newer groups that I have. I think it consists of about 10.
Charlie, I have an idea for you.
What?
Since Annette is the one that drives around running errands for you, get her to buy you one of those little bear bells that you can wear around your neck. So as you're going from room to room, the bell rings and they can hear you coming. So that's how you scare the bears away, you know, when you're hiking in the mountain or in
the woods. Yeah, right.
In your own home, for heaven's sakes.
So anyway, back to this guy that Nancy had on today. Oh, it is worth it for y'all to listen to the Shungite show from today. He was very interesting. He puts the Shungite powder on the back of the mirror, and then it makes it this black mirror that he can... The tunnel thing really interested me. He sees a tunnel in it. And I couldn't quite understand from what he was saying, because I wanted to know, when he looks at that tunnel and he's feeling like he could be drawn into it, did he feel safe that he could go ahead and let his spirit go into that tunnel and be able to come back?
Sounds like a shamanic journey.
I asked him directly about that, and he said that the Shungite was so grounding. He said he never left his perspective of his own body, and that he really doesn't know where that would lead. You know, the concept of he realized it was some portal. Let's put it that way, and He wasn't disputing the fact that he could do that. But as far as feeling secure, he felt very secure. He didn't feel like he was being drawn into it. He just felt like he was witnessing it. But then he said, so I made some kind of a joke about, you know, everybody's going to be making these so that they can go travel to different places. And, you know, I said, it'll take stalking to a whole new level. And he pointed out that you can't do anything negative with Shungite.
Yes, I was glad to hear that. Yes.
Yeah, but he did have some friends who had agreed to allow him to attempt to use the portal to, he wasn't specific, but I'm not sure, because I think maybe he isn't sure of the specificity of what might happen, but that he could somehow, from where he is with the mirror, make some kind of a change in their environment.
Yes, I got confused on that part, because he was confused answer it.
Yeah, it was one of those, well, we're thinking about along these lines, you know? And but I feel
You lost me that his friends wanted him to make a change in their environment?
No, so that he would be able to, like, you don't know. If you take and you allow your mind to go into that tunnel, is it directory? In other words, okay, I'm going to go to Bob's house and I'm going to turn on the faucet. Is it that kind of a thing? Do you have any control on where you're going? So in order to essentially practice it and investigate it, he wanted to know that there were two people at least that understood what he was doing, so they wouldn't get freaked out if something weird happened, like if he all of a sudden turned into an apparition in their kitchen. Because that, Whitley Strieber actually did that to, Linda Moulton Howe. He did an out of body. He wasn't in control of it, and he ended up in her bedroom, and she, she was really pissed, apparently.
Yeah, from what he was saying, she was.
She wouldn't talk to him for years.
Yes.
Well, she never asked for permission.
Well, he didn't. It was something he wasn't in control of. He just does it, pops out, and he ends up someplace. It's not just
the shamanic journey. To me, it used to begin the same way. You go into this opening into the earth, and but the thing is that you know where you're going because you know the person that you're doing the journey for and the questions that you have. So that's your map.
But this guy didn't know specific.
He's just investigating it. Because he was talking in terms of I forget what they call it. Well, I don't know what the name of it is. It begins with a T. But there was a this was really funny. It's a YouTube, and I'm going to post the YouTube. And it's about how when you stare at one certain thing, the peripheral will change. So the first demonstration was a green light, and around the green light were these white lights, four of them. And as you stared at the green one, very quickly the white lights just disappeared until you moved your eye and focused on them, because your brain is like, I don't know what this extraneous stuff is, but I'm just not going to pay any attention to it. And so it deepens your focus on the green light. Then they did it with these like pink circles around a plus sign. And you stare at the plus sign and they sort of pop out, you know, like all of a sudden they disappear one after the other. Well, one section did, and then they started doing this one. It's really interesting. But what I found so fascinating about the YouTube video was that it was a, sort of a public service thing. Because this same effect, which is very well known, is something that happens to drivers.
Yes.
In that you're staring down the street looking for something to happen, but in your peripheral, something may be happening, that but you don't see it. You know, and it made clear to me why when I was 16 years old, I drove out in front of a trailer truck. And I said, how could I not have seen a trailer truck? And the trailer truck went, hit the front end of the station wagon. The station wagon turned around, you know, started spinning. And then the back of the trailer ran the entire length of the car. Just right. And as it got to where the driver's seat was, it bounced slightly and then ended up on the hood. Which is why I'm here talking to you now. But the weird thing in the car was that all of this, you know, I look and all of a sudden there's a tire there. And I never saw the truck. It was all my fault, but I never saw it. And I know now that that's why. As a 16-year-old, you know, my eyes weren't darting back and forth. You just have to move them a little bit, you know. But you kind of like, you look and it wasn't there because I wasn't, the peripheral wasn't being focused in. I should have said
that was my, for years that was my father's complaint about American people. He says they don't have any side vision. You know, you're about to cross their path and they just keep going. There is no side vision. He kept complaining about it all the time because for us, side vision is a very normal thing. You always have to pay attention to everything, what's going on the side and what's going in front of you. But he said these people, they're like looking down a tube or something.
Well, it's because you guys are all paranoid. You're looking over your shoulders all the time.
Yeah.
Us Americans, we didn't have to be paranoid. We had nothing to be afraid of, for heaven's sakes. It's just that we got into a lot more accidents because we couldn't see what was happening right there. Oh, geez.
Well, another interesting optical effect is what happens when you drive and there's fog. It doesn't have to be a tremendous amount of fog, but enough fog that it's noticeable. It affects the light detecting elements in your eye in such a way that your perception of speed gets distorted. So you're driving down the street and you think you're driving at the normal speed, whatever the speed is, wherever you are. Let's say you're in a place and the speed limit is 40 miles. If you're just looking ahead and not looking at your speedometer, chances are the speedometer says 50 or 55 miles, because the fog affects your eye's ability to perceive the change in speed. So you think you're driving normal, but in reality, you're driving faster. It's a very interesting effect. So you have to mind the speedometer, because chances are is that you're racing. Because with the fog, your perception of speed goes down. You think you're driving slower, and you're not. You're driving faster.
You know what? You know what happens to people in Texas?
Oh, what?
They get mad when I say this, but this is a study done at one of the Texas universities. I forget which one now. In Texas, when it rains, it doesn't rain very often, but when it rains, they have a lot more accidents than normal. So the supposition was the water is causing the oil that's on the surface to come up and everybody starts sliding, right? But this university did a study, and what they did was they put people in mock-ups of cars and have them driving, you know, and then they started to make it rain and the windshield wiper and everything. And these people would start to focus on the water. On the because
you
it
mean
was,
the water hitting the windshield?
Exactly, the rain. They started watching the rain hitting the windshield. They could tell by the focus of their eyes.
Oh my gosh!
And it's because it didn't rain there; they weren't used to it, and so you know, oh look at that! Isn't that nice? You know, looking at the,
isn't that the washing machine hypnosis?
yeah. You know, people from Texas, I love to tell them that story because they get so mad at me.
Yeah,
I didn't say. I'm just telling it. Be careful of the rain. Yeah. Don't look at the raindrops on your windshield.
I thought that. Talking about rain, I thought that was kind of strange. Having lived 20 years in New York, where it's almost like living in London, because most of the year it's either cloudy or smoggy or, you know, hazy. You rarely see the sun, you know, most, even summers sometimes you hardly get to see the sun. So rain is a fact of life. It is the most common thing that you could experience living in New York. But it starts raining, you're on a highway, let's say it's 50 miles per hour limit. It starts raining, everybody drops down to 20. It just crawls. The traffic just crawls at 20 miles. And it's like, don't these people know how to drive in the rain? And I thought that, okay, it must be this way all over the U.S. Here I moved to Minnesota in 2003, and you're driving down the highway, 55 or 60. It starts raining. Nobody cares. Nobody changes their speed. Everybody, they don't accelerate, but they don't drop either. They just keep driving at their normal speed. I guess they have either they have a different sense of it or a different perception of it, or they trust their vehicles tremendously. But and the crazy thing in New York, again, going back to the fact that rain, you see rain all the entire year, you're going to see rain regardless of the season. It starts raining. 10 minutes after it starts raining, somewhere there's a car crash because of the rain. And this is not Texas.
Yeah, but they're Texas drivers.
Here it's raining. They're driving at 50, 55, 60 on the highway. You don't hear of any accidents. You're driving. I've seen accidents on the highway, but I've seen accidents like home. It's crazy. It's the other way around. I'll see an accident, either a street accident or a highway accident, on a perfectly dry, sunny day. There's all this light, not a cloud in the sky, very little traffic, and yet somehow these two vehicles managed to hit each other. Either they were on the phone, which is my number one. I blame phones mostly because I'm driving around and it's like scary out there. People driving with their stupid phones in their hands. Visual, you know, amount of light is not an issue. For whatever reason, they crashed, but you know, snow through, not because of water or lack of light. But no, when it comes to the rain, it's like they ignore it. They're driving at 60. I'm going to stay at 60. So I don't know if it's a culture thing or I don't know.
Well, you know, I want to go back to the Black Mirror scrying, because one of the things that Kevin was talking about was how he's a hypnotist and he does hypnotherapy, and he's using the mirror for some of his patients. And one of the things that happened, I don't know, clients I think is the correct term, and one of the things that happened was this woman, I guess it sounded to me like it was an auto accident, if I'm remembering correctly, but that's what made me think of this. And it was very traumatic for her that it's affected her throughout her life. And she was able to see it, witness it. Like they say, oh, just go back to the scene in your mind and, you know, work it out. But she was able to actually stand by like a witness, like an observer, and see it play out in the mirror. I thought that was fascinating. You remember that, Dolly?
I didn't hear that. I was trying to hear that. But something was going on. I can't remember what it was, and I did not get to hear that. And so I'm looking for my rewind button, and I didn't have one.
Your what?
So I missed
that. Oh, the rewind.
I wanted to rewind it.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I found that very interesting because, well, and he also was talking in terms of, because he knows hypnotherapy, you know, of how you can program yourself in just a regular mirror. But the magic that he was finding, he said that using the S4 Shungite mirror is a totally different experience in that the same things are happening, but when he goes, you stare at it and you want to lose your peripheral vision because that means your brain is all focused on that one point. And that happens much quicker, and he fall out of it, you know, because all you have to do is move your eyes and you'll all of a sudden fall out of that gaze. But he says it's very stable, and he sees the geometric shapes that you see. Anybody sees them. I mean, it's just part of what the brain does next. And yet instead of being more flat, you know, two-dimensional, they actually take on a 3D configuration to him. And then he talked about the tunnel, you know, and it was like, oh, wow.
A regular mirror wouldn't be psychoactive, would it?
Exactly. So, yeah, it's absolutely fascinating what he was talking about.
I don't know if I'd want to do that or not.
Why would you need to? You're already talking to the other side. And we all envy you for it.
I guess that's why, because I can see in what he was saying about the mirror was more like he couldn't see. He knew there was a tunnel there, but he couldn't see through it. When I talk to spirits, I can see them, and so I feel safer.
I felt that when he was talking
when
he was talking about that tunnel, I felt like it was like a passageway through the veil that doesn't exist for you.
Oh. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because when he was saying it, the words, you know, the veil came through my head.
Yeah, and Dolly, remember, you're the one haunting the other side. They're going to call a Ghostbuster on you. No, it's going to be a People Buster or something like that.
Yeah, can you imagine what that spirit had to say at the dinner table that night? Oh, by the way, I saw a human spirit.
This living broad scared the bejesus out of me.
Poor thing. Whoever it was really was scared.
Oh, my goodness.
Doesn't it make you wonder? You know, somebody does not have a body, so there's absolutely no way to kill them. And it makes you wonder, what would they be afraid of on the other side? You know, are there spiritual entities that attack other spiritual entities? I know there's energy vampirism existing on the other side. That's why you do things to keep the dark Aetherians at bay, because they are annoying. They can't kill you, but they will, you know. Like, for example, these investigators that go around investigating possessed places and haunted places, and they encounter, there's a situation that they encounter, which apparently happens more often than not, where they will find three or four entities, or be able to detect three or four entities, let's say, in a specific place. And let's say... there's four, and three of them are people that passed in that house, let's say, within the last 10 years. But then the fourth one is someone that died in that house 100 years ago. And for some inexplicable reason, those three are trapped by that fourth one. He won't let them go because he's bleeding them. He's draining their energy in order to keep a presence in that house. And that has been documented over and over again. So I guess on the other side, depending on what level of dimensional vibration you are, there are spiritual predators. entities that prey on other entities for their strength and their energy. Even if they don't want to do any harm, like Rich Ralston, the gentleman who lives in Hawaii, he does that remotely. He is able to go into a place and clear situations. And there wasn't anything evil or nasty, but he was able to help this family in one of the states here, where it was the husband, the wife, and a 6-year-old, no, it was a 9-year-old girl. And for some inexplicable reason, every day at 6 p.m., this girl had to go to bed because she couldn't stay awake. She would feel completely weak. She couldn't keep her eyes open. And she just had to go, she had to go to bed. And they were worried about this because the doctors couldn't find anything wrong. So he looked at their house remotely and found the strongest presence was in the basement, because this house had been reconditioned and rebuilt from an older house. And it turns out that there were three people in the basement. There was a father, a grandfather, and a little girl. So I think she was 5 or 6 years old. And what was happening is that every day at night, the little girl wanted contact with the other little girl. But in order to achieve any form of contact, she needed to pull on the living girl's energy. Because like Dr. Costa explained, the living in this dimension, we have all the power. The other guys, they can scream and yell and talk to us all they want, but they don't have any power. They don't have a physical vehicle with which to interact with this dimension. So this little girl, this dead little girl, was draining the living one in order to make her presence known. So once it was explained to them, you know, this isn't your house anymore, and you can move on. These people are the new owners. You don't need to be doing this to the little girl. So he helped these three folks move on. And after that, the health problems disappeared for the little girl, the daughter of this couple. So even that situation happens, and there's no malice on anyone's part. It's just the little ghost girl wanted to communicate, and the only way she could do that is to draw on it. That's another reason why you've seen the documentaries. Nancy has interviewed twice, I think, this gentleman who does this paranormal kind of investigation. And whenever the entities appear and they want to be acknowledged, they want their presence known, first thing that happens is either it'll be in a spot or the entire room, the temperature drops and it gets cold. And if you're filming it, sometimes you'll see that when the people are speaking, you see their breath, because all of a sudden the room got cold. Well, it got cold for a reason, because these entities needed to draw in ambient energy in order to let themselves be known. So they're pulling energy, and it's, you know, the ambient energy. And if you're a living being, you know, they're pulling energy from your body. So that's why you have to be so conscious and aware of what you give your consent to. Because if you're visiting these haunted places and you consent to being there and you consent to meeting, okay, that consent is, you know, you're letting, giving them permission to pull fuel out of your tank, you know, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, the spiritual side, the etheric beings, they can also pull energy from the environment. And that's why you have so many seemingly haunting events on stormy nights with electricity in the air.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's a great source of energy.
And fear. Mm-hmm. If somebody comes into an environment with fear, you're feeding the situation. You know, that's why, oh, I'm so afraid and I see them. And then the person says, I don't even see them. Well, that's because you're not afraid of them. You haven't seen them yet. It's a cyclic type of thing. But they don't have to just use human energy. It's energy.
Water, too.
Water.
Water gives them energies.
Yep. Yep, water is number one storage for organ. So.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I guess Dolly has a built-in stealth shield that even spirits can't see her coming.
And I wasn't even being quiet.
Dolly, I've never heard you talk about talking to a child, a spirit child. Have you never encountered one? Or?
No, I never have. I don't go out of my way looking to be around children because I can't really communicate well with them. So I would say they would pick that up and not come and seek me out.
Okay.
Especially if they're being little brats. I don't want to be around them when they're like that.
I can't say I blame you.
Mm-hmm. I prefer the older peoples, the more mature than children. I wanted to say, though, that even in people on this side can be what we call energy vampires.
Yeah.
So you need to be aware of that, too. If all of a sudden you're out in public and you feel like you're getting, oh, my gosh, I just can't do this anymore. I'm getting tired. I feel like I'm being zapped. Well, you probably are. And that's when you should immediately put up a protection. Get yourself in a protection bubble.
And we all have friends that when we talk to them on the phone or whatever, when they leave, you're going like, oh, my God, I'm so tired. Thankfully, they've left, you know. And It's because they're just zapping your strength.
Yeah. Some of them do it on purpose. Some of them don't realize that they're doing it.
Well, some of them don't care.
Yeah. They just know they feel good around you and they don't want to leave you. Yeah.
Yep. Well, it's like people that come into this house. I mean, this yard is full of shungite. And I've seen people who have never been here before, by the time they get to the house, they're virtually stoned. Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. I had one of the funniest little skits that I saw. I'm out in the yard, the front yard, and at that time it wasn't the big fence, it was a smaller fence. And these two women walk up, and actually, no, the fence wasn't there. They just walked in the front yard. Not very far in, you know, politely. And they were identifying themselves as belonging to the local Catholic church that was only a couple of blocks away. And, you know, the one of them was very missionary-like, trying to convince me that I should, you know, go to the Catholic Church. But I'm more fascinated with the one that's with her, because she's standing there in that yard, and this was pre-Shungite, and she's standing there, and she's just getting completely blissed out, you know, and the other one is saying, you should da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and this one's just, you know, just enjoying everything. And so the one that's trying to sell me on this, she finally realizes I'm a no-buy. And so she turns to leave. And the one that's so blissed out, she says to me, could we have our church picnic here? It just tickled me. I can't tell you. It was so appropriate. Oh, my goodness.
She knew there was something good in that yard.
Yeah. So we're getting to the top of the hour here. And, I'll have the Shungite show up on the YouTube. And do take a listen to it. It's you know, I said something to one of this friend of mine over at the vet's office about Black Mirror scrying, and she got really, really kind of weirded out. It's the first time I've ever said anything to her that I saw her weird out at, but she comes from the Dominican Republic.
Oh,
and that's right. Yeah. You know, and I think I spooked her.
Yeah,
something
I think
that a Kura Tero would use.
Yep.
Told you, my grandfather used to use a plate of water. That's what he would scry with.
And he just look into the water?
Yeah, they look into the water and they sit very still and you see their eyes like they're looking into the distance. And what's happening is that the water, the surface of the water is like a TV screen and they're seeing everything that's happening. But he would use it for healing. But unfortunately, given his lack of education on the matter, he was just doing it because it came natural to him. He was healing people, but he wasn't discharging himself. He wasn't clearing himself of all that energy. So he would get these horrible migraines, and he had to stop doing it. That's what happens when someone is not, you know, educated properly on these things. You have to clear yourself and ground out all those energies. Otherwise, you're walking around with everybody's crap on you.
Wow. Okay, so Dolly, you'll be on tomorrow. You're going to do another reading of David Wilcock's book.
Essential Mysteries. Yeah. And I did the DS already. Did you see that?
I saw it was there. I just didn't have time to pull it down.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's Dolly Shares. That's on at 6 o'clock, and her reading is on at 4, and Jamie Bates is on at 6, and Dolly's on at 7.
Yeah.
And then we're doing the 9/11 Crusade reading again because it's got 9/11 is beginning to get trendy again. It went years without the 9/11 page and Facebook doing anything, and it's been getting more and more likes lately. So,
I said, who's reading it?
Colleen. It's Colleen's reading.
She contacted you?
No. This is a tape she made back a few years ago.
Oh.
No. So anyway, Dolly, you want to say goodnight?
Oh, okay. Thanks for listening, y'all. Thank you, Nancy and Walt. I really appreciate listening to this show every week. And bye-bye.
Walt, you going to say goodbye?
Yes. First, I have to say thank you for Dolly for being a willing guest because she is such a joy to talk to. And thank our lovely audience who has the patience to put up with us. And at least my desire is to leave you with something useful, even if it's just a little bit of information. Thank you very much.
And thank you all. Be safe, be blessed, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, produced by Haggy Shack Radio and simulcast over Cosmic Reality Radio.